This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Candace Millard, author of The River of Doubt, Theodore Roosevelt's Darkest Journey. Where's the River of Doubt?
The River of Doubt is in western Brazil. It runs from south to north, begins in the Brazilian highlands and runs into the Amazon basin, finally empties into the Madeira River, which is the principal tributary of the Amazon.
And the closest city there is Manaus, right?
Yeah, I would guess. It's very, Vilhena, a small town, is near its headwaters. Mm-hmm. It's very remote.
And so that's about, give or take, 1,000 miles from the Atlantic.
Yeah, I would guess.
At what point was Teddy Roosevelt in his political career when he decided to take this journey?
It was right after he had lost the election of 1912, in which he ran as a third-party candidate. So he had already served his 2 terms as president. He had spent a year in Africa. He came back unhappy with Taft, what Taft was doing in the White House, and so thought he would run actually as a Republican. And when Republican leaders ensured Taft's victory in the primaries, Roosevelt decided to run as the Bull Moose Party, and so ended up splitting the Republican Party, putting Wilson in the White House, and becoming a pariah among his former friends and backers.
Why did they call it the Bull Moose Party?
After Roosevelt, it was the Progressive Party, and it was, you know, an homage to Roosevelt. And, you know, famously, when he was running during this election, he gave a talk in Milwaukee in which he was shot by a would-be assassin. And he went on to give a talk for an hour and a half with this bullet lodged 5 inches deep in his chest. And he famously said, "Takes more than that to kill a bull moose."
I wonder what the Secret Service was doing. Well, he's got a bullet in his chest. He's still talking.
Panicking. Everyone was panicking and begging him to go to a hospital. But, you know, this is Roosevelt. This is the Rough Rider, the cowboy. He's not about to wimp out and go to a hospital. He insisted on giving this talk, again, for an hour and a half. And, you know, this blood-soaked shirt. And finally started to weaken at the end of his talk.
I would think an audience would weaken after an hour and a half.
They were begging him to go. You know, yeah. They were transfixed and terrified.
How long was this trip in the Amazon on the Doubt?
He was in South America for a total of about 8 months. He went on a speaking tour first, and then it took him about a month by river to reach the point at which they had an overland journey across the Brazilian highlands just to reach the River of Doubt, and that took a month as well. And then they're on the river for 2 months.
How did they know about the river? If it's so remote.
They didn't know anything about it. Roosevelt had actually planned a much different expedition. When he was in the United States, he was going to go down very well-known rivers, and it was more a naturalist kind of trip. And when he got there, the foreign minister of Brazil said, "Well, you know, we have some other options if you'd like to consider." Of course, Roosevelt chose the most dangerous of these options, and this is the trip down this unmapped river. Someone had just found the headwaters.
Is he our most adventurous president?
I would say. I can't think of anybody who's as adventurous as Roosevelt. I mean, this, and even for Roosevelt, this was an extreme challenge. I think he felt very confident going in, and I think he realized pretty quickly that even he had gotten in over his head.
How long was the trip?
On the river, it was 2 months, and 3 men did not survive it, and Roosevelt nearly did not survive.
And how many people started out?
Started out with 22 men, a group of paddlers and porters, or 16 of those, and then a smaller group of officers, I guess you would call them. There were 3 Americans and 3 Brazilians.
What was his illness?
He, of course, had malaria. They all were suffering from malaria.
Yeah.
But he, more than that, he injured his leg when he was helping to tree some trapped canoes in the river. And he quickly developed a deadly bacterial infection that left him so ill that he could barely lift himself from his cot.
How did they move him?
Well, you know, again, I mean, he's insisting that he can walk, and they're walking after him with a chair, you know, when they move from camp to camp, and they're in these boats. And so he was, at the end, he was just lying down in the bottom of the boat, and they're trying to protect him from this, you know, the heat and the
insects.
Sun and the rain and the insects. Yeah, it was very difficult, and which is, again, why he nearly committed suicide.
With the dose of morphine that he carried with him.
Yes, they came to a point in the expedition where they had reached some seemingly impassable rapids. And even Rondon, his Brazilian co-commander, who had mapped more of the Amazon than any man alive and so knew it very well, even he believed they couldn't get through these rapids with their dugouts and would have to basically strike out into the forest, every man for himself. And Roosevelt a long time before had decided that he would never let his own physical weakness endanger the life of any other man. And so he had carried with him a lethal dose of morphine. He had never had to open the vial. Right. But at this point, again, he can barely lift himself from his cot, right. much less fight his way through the jungle. And so it wasn't martyrdom or fear. It was just, this is the right thing to do.
Noel, and I would suspect that there are many big travelers of the time who probably did the same thing. It was the reasonable thing. I mean, it's not like Indiana Jones where the plane comes in.
Right. No, there's no, once they started on this river, mm-hmm. there's no turning back. They're going deeper and deeper into the danger. And, you know, they're starving. They've lost canoe after canoe. They've lost supplies. They've lost men. They, you know, they're piranha and venomous snakes and caiman and a hostile group of indigenous tribesmen.
One of the photos shows the boat in the river, mm-hmm. and so they couldn't fish for piranha. Why not?
Well, this was during the rainy season, and the river floods the forest, and so the fish, you know, they've got lots to pick from. You know, and some of these fish have developed even like sheep molars, where they can crack open nuts and things. So right. there's, you know, they couldn't compete. So there's nothing tempting for these.
Oh,
fish.
So the time to fish for a piranha, of course, is
right.
the opposite.
Yeah,
now but it's the low season.
Right. Yeah, it's very difficult to catch them at that time.
When did you travel on the river?
I was there in 2003. It was also during the rainy season. It was the same time of year that Roosevelt and his men were there. And looks just like it did when Roosevelt and his men were there.
How long were you on the river?
I was in Brazil for a little less than a month and on and off the river.
How did you get to the river mm-hmm. when you were in Brazil?
Well, it's still extremely remote. What I did is I flew to Porto Velho and I rented a small plane and flew for hours over absolutely unbroken jungle. Most of the river today is in protected Indian territory, but there are small carved out areas where you can land, and there's a little fishing camp that I landed on, and that was sort of my base of operations.
Were you by yourself?
No, I had a translator and my husband came mm-hmm. with me.
Was your trip shadowed by the Santa Larga Indians?
No, I sought them out. I actually sought them out. Ah. And it was one of the most fascinating parts of my research. I was able to interview the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the men and women who shadowed Roosevelt and his men. It was fascinating.
Is your book mostly about Roosevelt the man or mostly this particular trip?
It's this trip, but it's interesting that you say it's Roosevelt the man, because that's exactly what it is. I think that's what's so illuminating about this expedition. Mm-hmm. I think we're used to seeing Roosevelt as a politician or a president. But here you really do see him as a man. You know, he's so sick. He's terrified. He's going to lose his son. They're starving. They're worried about Indian attack at any moment. And it really kind of strips him to his core, and you really get to see who he was.
Tough guy under fire.
Incredibly tough guy, incredibly strong and brave. You know, I was worried when I started doing the research. I had always admired Roosevelt, and I thought, mm-hmm. I wonder if he's going to let me down when I really mm-hmm. look into this. And it was the opposite. He was so strong, but more than that, he was very caring. You know, he really cared about these other men, obviously his son, but every man in this expedition, even the porters and paddlers, when they were certain that they would not survive, they always turned to Roosevelt for strength and reassurance, and he never let them down.
Why did you decide to write this?
Well, I worked at National Geographic for 6 years, and it's a kind of place where it's very hard to work without developing a passion for natural science, and it's hard to have a passion for natural science without being interested in the Amazon. You know, it's just this extraordinary place, incredible diversity mm-hmm. of life. And then I had a conversation with the Roosevelt scholar James Chase, and he wrote a book, 1912, which was about the 1912 election, and he mentioned that he was surprised more hadn't been written about this trip that took place after it. And so I started doing research on my lunch hour and the uh-huh. weekends. And, you know, I would call my husband like every 5 minutes and say, you know, somebody drowned on this trip. You know, someone was murdered on this trip. Roosevelt nearly took his own life. And I just thought, I have to write about this.
Well, in your acknowledgments, you praise the dedication of scientists and other specialists who spare no effort to ensure that the National Geographic magazine details are correct.
Yes.
And so, did you consult with some of these people when you were writing this book?
I did. It was great training for many reasons. Working at National Geographic is a wonderful place to work, fascinating, and you know everything that you want to believe about it is true. And so I did learn that there are these scientists who, you know, there's no profit for them, but they really care about their subject matter so much that they're willing to go out of their way. And I thought, well, would the same be true when it's just Candace Millard? It's not National Geographic asking. And it was true every time.
Thank you. My guest is Candace Millard, author of The River of Doubt, published by Doubleday. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it, Diana.
You're welcome.